Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Hey there, friends. Gather around your wireless radio machine for a special episode of Legion of News. Rick Emerson is on a round-the-world dirigible voyage, but Don Taylor and Eric D. Snyder are preparing stories pertaining to politics, society, diversion, and the sciences, plus all the latest news from Tinseltown. Legion of News is brought to you by Dapper Dan Hair Pomade. If you want to be a dapper man, smear a fistful of Dapper Dan on your head. Why, look, there at the news desk. It's our old friend Don Taylor.
Why, good afternoon. I am here at a very special episode of Legion of News as Rick Emerson is traveling about the world on his book tour. I am here joined by Mr. Eric D. Snyder.
Hello.
Hello. And we are now just going to go straight to the headlines. Cassius Clay, the deposed heavyweight champion, was convicted by a jury tonight of violating the United States Selective Service laws by refusing to be drafted. Federal District Judge Joe E. Ingraham sentenced Clay to 5 years in prison and fined him $10,000. This was the maximum penalty for the offense, which is a penalty. The judge's sentence was pronounced immediately at Clay's request. The 25-year-old boxer said, "I'd appreciate it if the court will do it now. Give me my sentence now instead of waiting and stalling for time." His lawyer said he, quote, "wants to be able to sleep tonight without worrying what the sentence would be."
I don't blame him.
No. Clay actually did bring honor to the United States by winning the Olympics in Rome in 1960. And he has become heavyweight champion of the world and also became a Muslim in 1964. I don't know if you were aware of that.
Interesting. But he changed his name.
Yes. His step was jaunty, by the way, as he walked from the courtroom after being released on $5,000 bond. He held hands with two young women who had been with him during intermissions in the trial. So apparently his lady friends did not mind the fact that he refused to serve in our armed forces.
Well, ladies like a bad boy.
They do.
They like a rebel.
Plus, he's a fine figure of a man, Cassius Clay.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure.
He's a good lady. And smart. Smart as a whip.
Yeah.
His wits are about him. He can rhyme like nobody's business.
That's true. He will probably always be that way.
Yes, probably. I see big things for that young man.
My turn?
Oh, yeah.
President Wade.
You can just read it in any voice you like.
Thought I'd do Elmer Fudd that time. President Reagan was wounded in the chest Monday by a gunman who tried to assassinate him with a burst of .22 caliber bullets from a Saturday Night Special.
Oh no.
The Associated Press has the phrase "Saturday Night Special" in quotation marks.
Well, it's not
really the name of the gun. It's, you know, so-called Saturday Night Special.
It's colloquial.
If you know what we mean.
It's what the kids are calling it.
White House Press Secretary James S. Brady was also critically injured in the blaze of gunfire, but he wasn't the president. Reagan sailed through surgery. Just sailed through.
Oh.
Breezed through. Perhaps in the manner of Cassius Clay. Jauntily.
Yeah. Like a butterfly.
Like a butterfly. And said he'd be ready to make presidential decisions by today.
So you Thank God.
So you can expect those weapons any time now, Contras.
You know, I saw the footage of that on the news, and the Secret Service just hustled him right into the back of the limo.
Yeah,
they just got him right out of there. He looked a little bit scared.
He had just been shot.
Well, yeah, but I mean, he looked scared that they were manhandling.
Oh, like that was the scary part.
That was what it is. He didn't look like he was in pain. He looked startled.
Like, what are you doing?
Like, why are you grabbing me? I'm an old man. Eek!
You got to figure those Secret Service men, they live for that.
Oh yeah,
like they have trained for that specific moment their entire careers.
Right.
And so when it happens, they swing into action immediately.
What would suck are the guys who were guarding James Brady. Because it's like all of a sudden, like, la, la, la. Oh, crap, he's down like a sack of ham. Oh. And then all you can do is just sort of dive on his body and hope he doesn't get shot again.
They weren't expecting that.
No. By the way, in case you haven't figured out, this is a very special episode of Legion of News. We are pre-recording this, so don't call us. If you've got the check box open, you can say anything you like, but we're not here to listen. So,
because the chat box hasn't been invented yet.
That's right.
In the past.
But feel free to send us a telegram. Into the past. In other news, Julius Rosenberg and his wife Ethel have been convicted for conspiracy to transmit classified military information to the Soviet Union.
Oh.
In the trial, the government charged that in 1944 and 1945, the Rosenbergs had persuaded Ethel's brother, David Greenglass, an employee at the Los Alamos Atomic Bomb Project, to provide them and a third person, Harry Gold, with top-secret data on nuclear weapons. The chief evidence against the Rosenbergs came from Greenglass and his wife, Ruth. Both Julius and Ethel Rosenberg have received the death sentence. Morton Sobel, a co-defendant, received a 30-year prison term, as did Harry Gold. They will be the first U.S. civilians to suffer the death penalty in an espionage trial.
Interesting.
Interesting.
Well, good for them.
Some are claiming that the political climate made a fair trial impossible and that the only seriously incriminating evidence came from a confessed spy. Others are questioning the value of the information transmitted to the Soviet Union and argue that the death penalty is too severe. Communists in the United States and abroad have organized a campaign to save the Rosenbergs.
The communists.
And received the support of many liberals and religious leaders.
Yeah. Like Obama.
Yeah. He's probably behind this.
Probably. Those liberals.
Well, you know, the liberals have their agenda. Their liberal agenda.
I've heard that.
And the Rosenbergs first to be convicted, to be sent to death for espionage.
Huh. I guess someone had to be first.
Yeah. So remember where you were on this day when you heard that. Remember what you were doing.
The Rosenbergs. Lighter news.
Hmm.
General Custer's command came upon the main camp of Sitting Bull on June 25th, and at once attacked it.
Oh!
Charging the thickest part of it with five companies. Major Reno, with seven companies attacking on the other side. The soldiers were repulsed. I'm not surprised.
No.
Soldiers were repulsed.
Have you eaten with those people?
And a wholesale slaughter ensued. General Custer, his brother, his nephew, and his brother-in-law were killed, and not one of his detachment escaped.
Now, wait a minute. There were a whole lot of companies involved in this. How is it possible that they were killed?
It was his last stand.
Oh.
It was scheduled.
It sounds like there was some poor planning involved.
There may have, it seems like better luck next time, General Custer.
Hmm.
It was the opinion of Army officers in Chicago, Washington, and Philadelphia, including Generals Sherman and Sheridan, that General Custer was rashly imprudent to attack such a large number of Indians.
I should say so.
Monday morning quarterbacking.
Yeah.
Sitting Bull's force was about...
Easy for Sherman to say now.
Yeah. Sitting Bull's force was about 4,000 strong. General Sherman thinks that the accounts of the disaster are exaggerated.
Well, by who? Who's exaggerating?
Out of the liberal media.
There you go. It's a... Fox News, on the other hand, they're on top of this. They're the pro Sherman camp.
Fox News at this point is actually news about foxes.
Indeed.
Fox News out on the prairie. Some got into the hen house again the other night.
I took too much pleasure from that. I enjoyed that way too much. Is this fun? Are
this
we having a good time?
Yeah.
Okay. Vice President Nixon and Senator John F. Kennedy argued genteelly last night in history's first nationally televised debate between presidential candidates.
Mm-hmm.
The two men, confronting each other in a Chicago television studio, centered their argument on which candidate and which party offered the nation the best means for spurring United States growth in an era of international peril. The candidates, without ever generating a real heat in their exchanges, clashed on the following points. First, Mr. Nixon's farm program, which Senator Kennedy said was merely another version of policies that had been tried and failed under Ezra Taft Benson, the Secretary of Agriculture.
Mm.
You remember that?
Yes, he was a Mormon.
Yes.
Taft Benson.
And his failed farm programs.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't work.
No.
That's why we don't have farms anymore.
The Republican and Democratic performance records on efforts to increase the minimum wage to $1 an hour and broaden its coverage, school construction legislation, and medical care for the aged. Mr. Kennedy charged the Republican record on these measures showed the party gave only lip service to them.
Yeah.
Hard to believe the Republicans not doing a good job with medical care for the aged.
Weren't interested in helping old people. Yeah, that's not like them.
Or increasing the minimum wage.
And I don't want to sound petty, but it seemed to me watching the debate that Nixon looked sweaty.
He did. He looked a little sweaty. That Kennedy is a handsome man.
That is a, yeah.
He's a
good-looking
man.
I would kiss him. I would kiss him on the mouth.
He probably would not kiss you back, though, because he's a married man and a Catholic.
That's
and
true.
So I'm sure that he is probably as straight arrow and as loyal to his wife as he possibly
chaste,
could be.
Yes, I would imagine so. I would imagine so.
The comparative records of the Truman and Eisenhower administrations on fiscal security was also another issue. Mm. Mr. Nixon asserted that in school and hospital construction, the Republican years had seen an improvement over the previous seven Democratic years. Moreover, he said wages had risen five times as much in the Eisenhower administration as during the Truman administration. So, Mr. Nixon contended that either he will have to raise taxes or you'll have to unbalance the budget. And he said that unbalancing the budget would mean another period of inflation and a consequent blow to the country's aged living on pension incomes. That, declared Senator Kennedy, is wholly wrong, wholly in error.
Oh.
In one of the evening's few moments of real passion.
That is wholly wrong and wholly in error.
Yes. Mr. Nixon, he said, was attempting to create the impression that he was in favor of unbalancing the budget, and he would have none of that.
Hmm.
He also said, I don't believe in big government, but I believe in effective government. I think we can do a better job. I think we are going to have to do a better job.
Is that Nixon talking?
That was Nixon. Yeah. No, that was Kennedy.
No, that was Kennedy. All right.
Kennedy, not believing anything. He also said that we needed to do more about our hydroelectric power construction because at the present rate, the Soviet Union will be producing more power than we are by 1975.
And well,
we need power. It's time America started moving again, he said. And I think he has a good point there.
I agree with that. That Nixon seems tricky.
There's something a little bit shifty about him. There's something about him I really don't quite trust. I'm not sure what it is. I don't know if I could really put my finger on it.
It's because he's a Unitarian, I think.
That could be it, yes.
Shifty-eyed. Mm. Diana, Princess of Wales, was killed because her chauffeur was driving at high speed under the influence of drink and drugs.
Oh.
And not because of a voluntary act by press photographers or intelligence services, two French investigating magistrates said yesterday.
Mm.
They also stated that Imad Al-Fayed and Lady Diana would have survived if they had fastened their safety belts.
They didn't have their seat belts
fastened? No. Well, it's a little late for should-haves,
should
say. It was like that thing with Custer.
Yeah.
Sure, the next day, easy to say what you should have done.
Right. But in the heat of the moment.
So they were in the official judicial report into the fatal car crash 2 years ago in Paris. The magistrates dropped manslaughter charges against nine photographers and a press motorcyclist who were following the princess's car. A simple one-page summary issued in Paris yesterday concluded France's most expensive and longest judicial investigation into a road accident. It lasted 18 months and involved 30 police officers, 6,000 pages of evidence, and 200 witnesses.
I wonder what the second largest French investigation into a car accident entailed.
Good question.
Yeah, like, you know, a day and a half. I mean, really, it's a car accident.
How much time can you really spend?
Yeah, and it's France.
Right. It seems like it's. I don't think anyone ever is even close to as prominent as Princess Diana ever died in a car accident in France.
No,
I don't think.
I just imagine, you know, smoking their frog cigarettes and one car it hit the other car. Okay, c'est la vie.
Now both are dead.
Yeah.
What was that? Was it Isadora Duncan who died out driving with a scarf around her neck that got caught in the wheel?
Yes.
Did that happen in France?
It
seemed like it was in Europe somewhere.
It might have been. I thought it was in England, but it could have been.
Oh, it could have been. I don't know.
Inspired by a friend of mine, I actually went to a Halloween party once as Isadora Duncan. I just wore a very, very long scarf with a hubcap tied to one end.
That's a good joke.
Isn't that a good joke?
That's esoteric.
That's history.
Yeah.
History humor.
Did people get it?
No.
No, well.
No, I had to tell people. And then I had to tell people who Isadora Duncan was. And
right.
Then I had to tell them who died. My friend that I went with got a lot better response, actually, with her Halloween costume, which was Santa Claus.
That is easier for the average person to parse.
Although it is a hilarious Halloween costume, by
it's
the
kind
way,
of funny
I must
Halloween
say.
Costume.
I've been holding that one in reserve to do again myself someday.
You know, I just, speaking of Santa Claus. Since we were.
Yeah, we were, as you do.
Yeah. I just saw a movie called, it's a Dutch movie called Saint, and it's about a killer Santa Claus.
Oh, I've heard about that.
It's fun. They take the old Dutch tradition of Sinterklaas, mm-hmm. and they make it that he was a Catholic saint who went around killing people, and so finally the townspeople took revenge and killed him 500 years ago, and now any time that Christmas Eve falls on a full moon, he comes back from the dead with his legion of Black Peters, which I guess is a thing in the Dutch, like his elves.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
Black Peters.
I was in a movie once called Black Peters, but that was entirely different. Anyway, it's pretty good. Saint.
It was college.
It was Killer Santa Claus going around killing people. Good times.
Like
good times.
See, I'd like to see that.
Yeah.
All right. This is a sad story.
Oh.
A raid on a heavily armed compound of a religious cult in Waco, Texas, erupted into a bloody gun battle on Sunday, leaving at least 4 federal agents and 2 cult members dead and at least 15 agents injured. The cult's 33-year-old leader, who has told followers that he is the Messiah, told a local radio station that a 2-year-old inside the walled compound had been killed in the shootout and that several other people were hurt. But a standoff at the compound that continued early this morning prevented any independent confirmation of the account. The battle erupted after more than 100 agents seeking to arrest the leader on a weapons charge emerged from hiding in livestock trailers about 9:30 Sunday morning and entered the fortified 77-acre compound 10 miles outside of Waco. The agents retreated after 45 minutes of shooting, their dead and wounded carried away by ambulance and helicopter, and negotiated a ceasefire with the group by phone.
Did they ever find out if the guy, what's his name, Koresh?
David Koresh.
Ever find out if he actually was the Messiah, or is that still undetermined?
I don't think he was, because he told CNN he had been, quote, shot through the guts.
Oh.
And I don't think that that would actually happen to this Messiah.
Well, it could happen, but he wouldn't be hurt by it.
No, that's
true. He'd recover.
Yes, he would just crawl off to a cave somewhere, and then later he would be gone.
Right.
The raid came the day after a long article on the sect appeared in a local newspaper, but an official of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms said the raid had been planned for months. The official, Ted Royster, a special agent for the Dallas field office, spoke at a news conference and said that it was clear that despite elaborate preparations, members of the sect, who are called the Branch Davidians, had somehow learned of the raid in advance.
Oh.
They knew we were coming, Mr. Royster said. I cannot tell you what went wrong. It appeared as though they were waiting for us.
Someone probably tweeted about it.
Probably.
You know what they should have done? Instead of sending in the raid like that, they should have sent in the Navy SEALs.
The Navy SEALs apparently...
An elite group of Navy SEALs.
Yes, they can handle anything.
Just dash in and just one headshot. Yeah. Take care of it. That's what they should have done.
Our good friend Aaron Duran of Geek in the City told us yesterday on the Rick Emerson show that apparently the Netflix requests for the DVD Navy SEALs went up like 800%.
I can imagine.
Sunday's kerfuffle.
I can imagine. Was it really a kerfuffle?
Well, Sunday's...
taking out the world's most notorious mass murderer.
It was a bit of a
skirmish.
Free-for-all. A skirmish.
A fracas.
Yes, a fracas thing. Well, I think it's about time that we did a little, let's call it, science news. Here we have it, right here.
Oh. Is this sponsored?
Yes.
Yeah, dog. Science News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Squires Electric for all your electricity needs. No job is too large or too small. From installing a dimmer switch to wiring entire buildings to fortifying your cultist compound with the latest high-tech electrical devices. Their expertise at Squires Electric makes sure the job gets done right the first time. Find them at SquiresElectric.com on the electric internet, SquiresElectric.com, or call them 503-252-1609. That's 503-252-1609, Squires Electric. They're also on the Facebooks, Squires Electric.
For the first time, a test tube baby conceived in a laboratory dish has been born in an American hospital.
That defies the laws of nature, God, and man.
Elizabeth Jordan Carr, weighing 5 pounds, 12 ounces, and described as perfectly healthy.
You shouldn't talk about a woman's weight.
No.
That's not polite.
She was delivered yesterday morning at Norfolk General Hospital in Norfolk, Virginia. The birth, which came 2 weeks ahead of schedule, brings to at least 15 the number of babies who have been born in this manner. The rest were in Britain and Australia, although one was born to American parents in England. About 100 women have become pregnant through the same procedure, 5 of them in the United States. At least 5 American clinics are treating infertile women this way, but so far with meager success. Nevertheless, reliability seems to be improving rapidly. The time when it becomes standard treatment for several causes of infertility may be drawing near. The December 5th issue of the British medical journal Lancet It's tripping all over my own tongue today.
Better than tripping over my tongue.
Well, you say that now. Suggests editorially that the procedure may become simple and reliable enough to be handled as an outpatient service someday.
Preposterous.
The parents of the newborn baby are Judith Carr, a 28-year-old schoolteacher, and her husband, Roger Carr, 30, of Westminster, Massachusetts. The technique, known medically as in vitro fertilization, and called colloquially test tube conception, was conducted at Eastern Virginia Medical School in Norfolk by Dr. Howard Jones and his colleagues, who were the first to try it in the United States. And this is how it works. An egg cell removed from Mrs. Carr was fertilized in a laboratory dish with sperm from her husband.
Oh, good heavens.
The resulting embryo was then inserted into her womb.
That's filthy.
For normal gestation and birth.
This is the raunchiest conversation we've ever had.
I know. But apparently it worked. This crazy, crazy scheme to implant a fertilized egg inside a woman actually worked.
Well, now
apparently it has happened at least 15 times.
That's it. Now, if the lady had her eggs and if her husband had his sperms, then and they worked, then why couldn't she just have the baby the normal way?
I'm really not sure. Sometimes it just, just doesn't work.
Well, this abomination they've created, is that a human now?
It I believe it actually...
Is a human baby?
Technically counts as a human baby.
Huh. Will it be able to vote and own property?
That, I don't think they're really sure about that yet. I don't know.
Interesting.
It may actually legally be considered a pet.
That's what I would think. It seems more like a pet. It seems more like a novelty device.
Yeah. It's
like sea monkeys.
And we also don't know if it's going to have a fully functioning brain.
Right.
Because, you know, it is an abomination that is just flying in the face of God.
Yeah, it was created by tampering in God's domain.
Right.
It's probably evil.
It could
right?
be. Yeah, it is probably.
How long before they know whether it's evil? How long before that emerges?
Well, for starters, they don't mention in the story if it was born with a tail.
What about a goatee?
I think you have to wait until it is old enough to be riding around on a tricycle and maybe knock you over the balcony in your home. When
yes.
you are trying to hang, geraniums.
That would indeed be a dangerous omen.
If it makes the nanny jump to her death,
right?
Then you might that could be a sign that
that would be
the child
a
is
bad omen.
Evil, yes. Apple Computers has introduced the launch of
Apple Computers. What does an apple need a computer for? Come on.
Apple Computers has announced the launch of the Macintosh SE, which appears to be a visual redesign on the original Macintosh design. The compact Mac form factor was the way Macs are supposed to look, but changes have sort of been hidden to the casual viewer. From a practical standpoint, the new SE's biggest improvement is a second internal drive bay, which could hold a second floppy or, and here's something completely new, an internal SCSI hard drive.
An internal... So you're saying the thing that... those things are like the size of a room or like the size of a table.
Not here. They're actually making it small enough. They can put a 20-megabyte internal hard drive in the computer as a secondary hard
20
drive.
20 megabytes.
Yes.
You would never need that much space for anything. That would hold like all the books in
the
world.
I know. It's kind of crazy.
Huh.
It's
the Japanese.
I mean... The setup allows you to create partitions. It's crazy.
Will I be able to play Pac-Man on it?
On the back are ADP ports, which support the Apple desktop bus, which was introduced the previous year, last year, in Apple 2GS. That's mostly used for mice and keyboards, but it also will support sketch tablets, modems.
Modems.
All kinds of, yes.
I've heard
modems.
Of that where computers are talking to each other.
Right. And also so you can get onto bulletin boards.
Right.
And talk to other people. With their other computers.
That's amazing.
It's kind of crazy.
It changes everything.
It does. It looks like.
I said, mark my words, within 5 years, no more newspapers.
Right.
They've been replaced by this Apple Macintosh.
Yeah. And what's going to be interesting is there's going to be a point in which we just don't need paper anymore.
Yeah.
Because everything is going to be done on computers.
Right.
And we're going to just not need paper.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that happening.
Yeah. By the way, I'd take a moment here to remind you this is a very special episode of Legion of News. This is pre-recorded, so please do not call us or text us.
Do not adjust your set.
If you're confused, sorry about that, but really, It's a very special episode of Legion of News.
Very, very special.
Very special.
Because where's Rick?
Rick is on a dirigible trip around the world.
Oh, right.
He's actually promoting his book.
What's his book coming called? Out.
His book is called Zombie Economics.
Oh.
And it comes out, I don't know, this week.
Is it a graphic novel?
No, it is. Actually, he wrote it with Lisa Desjardins of CNN News. Oh. And it is actually a guide to personal finance.
What does zombies have to do with it?
I'm glad you asked. It presents personal finances basically as if, in the same manner as if you were getting advice on how to survive the zombie apocalypse.
Oh.
You know, what you should store and why, how you should handle your resources.
Right. Oh, that makes sense.
And it's actually a surprising, because I've seen the book, I've read through it. It's a really good analogy. And there's like chapters of zombie stuff, and then there's chapters of very, very basic workshop stuff for normal people to figure out how to do finances. Because most books that are about finances seem to be for people who have money.
Right.
Like, you know, and here's where you should put all that extra money.
Yeah, here's what you should invest in. Yeah. Invest in these funds and these things.
Yeah, and this is really honest to God economics, personal finance for actual real working people. And it's presented in a very easy to read and really easy to deal with. It's really actually very, and I'm not just saying this because he's Rick and I work with him. It's really a very good book.
It sounds good. Does it have a lot of pictures of Rick in the book?
No, it does not. Although
one has to supply one's own.
Yeah. Yes, you do. You could just get pictures of him off the internet, print them out, paste them into the book.
That's what I'm going to do. You know what I do to save money is when I see like panhandlers wanting money, uh-huh. I no longer just give them my debit card.
That's probably why. That's
what I used to do that. It was easier,
yeah.
But now I don't do that anymore.
And I just draw them a dollar bill on a napkin and give it to them because I figure they won't know the difference. They're crazy.
That's true. They're crazy and homeless.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what happened?
No, what happened?
President Kennedy, inspired by a tumultuous welcome from more than a million of the inhabitants of the isolated and divided city of Berlin, declared today that he was proud to be, quote, a Berliner. So that's a shocking development. Our president is German, apparently.
Real.
He said his claim to being a Berliner was based on the fact that, quote, all free men, wherever they may live, are citizens of Berlin. That is,
that doesn't make any sense demonstrably, to me at all.
Demonstrably untrue.
No.
All free men.
You're a free man, and you're not a citizen of Berlin.
No, I'm not. Not at all. I am a free man. All free men, wherever they live, are citizens of Berlin. That is not true. That doesn't make any sense at all.
What else did he say?
I don't know. This guy's a crackpot. We should have elected Nixon.
I know. What were we thinking?
Who cares if he was sweaty?
I know.
Why did that decide it?
This guy thinks he's...
Why did we vote for the
hands? This guy thinks he's German.
This is the last time we ever vote for someone just because they're handsome.
That's right.
We will never make that mistake again.
No.
In a rousing speech to 150,000 West Berliners crowded before the city hall, the president said anyone who thought we can work with the communists should come to Berlin. Well, tough talk.
And do what?
I don't know. Just come enjoy the sights.
Hmm.
Enjoy the local cuisine.
Go there in time for the Love Festival, and you can enjoy naked people wearing like feather boas on parade floats.
Whenever I think of Berlin, I only think of cabaret.
That's it? That's the only
that
thing
the
you
only
think
thing
of?
I think of, cabaret. Hmm. To me, that is Berlin. And that's what I, I think Berlin is still like.
Welcome. Mm-hmm. Cabaret.
As far as I know, that is still what Berlin is like. Cabarets and whores and the threat of Nazis.
Yeah. And bisexual lovers and
yes.
and singing while sitting on chairs wearing bowler hats.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just a filthy place.
Berlin.
Just a randy place.
Have you read Christopher What's-His-Name's stories that Cabaret was based on?
No,
the
I haven't.
Berlin stories, I believe, is what they're actually about.
I believe you're right, yeah.
Very good.
Yeah?
Really, really good. Really worth reading.
I wonder what made someone read those and think, oh, this would make a good musical.
I don't know.
Because it kind of ends with like with the Nazis showing up, right?
Yeah.
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 I just wonder. Because the Sound of Music also ends with the Nazis showing up. How many musicals end with Nazis showing up?
Well, it was Cantor and Ebb. Wasn't that the same ones who
No, Rodgers wrote? And Sound of Music were Rodgers and Hammerstein.
No, I'm talking about
Cantor
Cabaret.
And Ebb. Yeah, we're Cabaret. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, who also did Chicago.
Yes.
Which is also another weird thing to do a musical about.
That's true.
Yes, I know Sound of Music was...
No, I thought you were saying that those, that they were the same writers, and that's why they both had the Nazis.
No.
They were fixated on Nazis.
No. A different guy wrote Bent, too.
Yeah. There must be other musicals with Nazis, aren't there? Well, the producers. The
producers has
involves Nazis.
Nazis. Yeah.
Really, what musicals don't have Nazis? I guess that's
you
the question.
Think about it. Oklahoma, Nazis.
Full of Nazis.
Yeah, corn Nazis.
Corn.
Hate those damn corn Nazis.
And the reports from Fox News.
We are cracking ourselves up, by the way, and Sabrina Miller is over here doing the engineering duties for us, and she just keeps just looking over us like...
She couldn't possibly care less.
Corn Nazis.
She couldn't be less interested in our diversions.
I can't believe they're saying
she is not amused
corn
by
Nazis.
How funny we are. Oh, now she's doing sign language. Sabrina's very sweet.
Or she's just touching her boob for our benefit. Either way.
Whatever. She's miming.
What? Good.
I'm writing questions about porn right now, so I'm having a good time.
Sure. All right. Do you want this copy of Exotic Magazine that's sitting over here by me? It's the Extreme Fetish issue.
Thank you very much to Jay Mackin for bringing that into the Cascadia.fm studio.
Why am I not surprised?
Yeah.
Well, it does smell like Axe body spray.
Well, and the pages are a little sticky.
Oh, God.
Come on.
Put that down.
No.
No.
Oh. All
right. We're not very old-timey.
That went.
It's like working at Fantasy Video.
Okay, more science here. I forgot we were doing
I forgot we were doing science too.
I did too.
That Berlin story was nothing to do with science. I'm sorry.
Well, Kennedy's very into the space program, so we'll pretend
that's
true.
That's true.
A Soviet Air Force officer who yesterday became the first man to leave an orbiting spacecraft and float in space was still circling the Earth earlier today in a capsule with a fellow astronaut, Lieutenant Colonel Alexei A. Leonov. 30 years old, left the two-man Vashkad 2 as it passed over the Soviet Union while completing its first orbit and beginning its second. He stayed outside the cabin for 10 minutes, according to TASS, the official Soviet
press. It's because he got thrown out because he kept farting.
Yeah, they eat a lot of cabbage.
His buddy was like, you're going to keep farting, you go outside. Go out in space. Go fart in space.
I can't do a Russian accent.
You make fart in space.
There you go. In Russia, space farts on you. The spaceship, piloted by Colonel Pavel I. Belyayev, 39, was launched at 10 a.m. Moscow time yesterday. The launching site, not announced at first, was later said to be the Cosmodrome Baikonur in Kazakhstan.
Cosmodrome.
They have a cosmodrome.
Wow.
We don't have a cosmodrome.
We have an astrodome. That's the closest thing we have to a cosmodrome.
We play football there. That's not the same thing. They have a cosmodrome.
And they're called cosmonauts, aren't they?
Yes.
They're guys.
Yes.
That's cooler than astronaut.
There was widespread speculation that
I wish we were Soviets.
Yeah.
Sorry. Go on.
There was widespread speculation that a second spaceship might be launched sometime today in an attempt to effect for the first time a link-up of two crafts in space. As Colonel Leonov traveled through space tethered to his ship at a speed of nearly 5 miles a second, he was shielded by a specially equipped spacesuit. This protected him from the intense heat of the sun.
Oh, my God. So he's being dragged at 5 miles a second?
Yes.
Wow.
They said that even the slightest penetration of his suit by the sun's rays would have caused instant death.
Wow.
He had a 5-yard rope lifeline that connected him to the ship, and if that had broken, he would have been lost, orbiting the Earth as a human satellite.
Forever.
Yes. And his body would have burned up on re-entry after a week or maybe even months of orbiting.
Oh, my gosh.
But no, he stayed tethered, so he was fine. But that must be very scary.
Wow. And he was the first person to do that? Is that what that told us?
Yeah, the first man to leave an orbiting spacecraft and float in space.
That's stupid.
What's the point of that?
I would never do that.
Why is that even necessary?
No,
there's a reason we make the space capsule.
Well, yeah. I can see if you're like flying to the moon or something. When you get to the moon, you'll get out of the space capsule.
Yeah.
Don't get out while you're traveling there.
No. What's the point of that?
That's absurd. Man, it's probably just because they thought it would be cool.
Yeah, they're just showing off because we haven't done it yet. So look, Americans, we can get out of our space capsule.
They got really drunk on vodka one night. They're like, what if I am tying you to capsule and drag you? Like, yeah. F yeah!
Drag me by the space capsule!
For Russia!
Yeah, and then later they couch it as like, oh, you went walking in space. Like they planned it all along.
That was Ruskies.
Okay, that was all the science. There's no more science.
Science on the Mart.
Yeah, all right. Do you want to read another story, or shall I?
Sure, I can do one.
Okay.
Here's what happened. The long-looked-for moment has arrived. What moment is that, you say?
Mm.
Well, the construction of the Pacific Railroad is finished. The inhabitants of the Atlantic seaboard and the dwellers on the Pacific slopes are henceforth emphatically one people.
Oh, yay! It's a great day for America.
Your correspondent is writing on Promontory Summit amid the deafening shouts of the multitude with the tick-tick of the telegraph close to his ear.
Mm.
This is happening May 10th. 18...
Yesterday. Happened yesterday.
The completion of the Pacific Railroad has monopolized public attention here today to the exclusion of everything else. Well, what else would be going on? Really?
Yeah.
Middle of the 1800s in Utah. Nothing else going on.
No.
The feeling is one of hearty rejoicing at the completion...
Well, you know, burying people.
A lot of burying of people, a lot of killing of Indians.
Yeah.
But that's everyday stuff.
That's true.
This is... They finished the railroad here.
Yeah.
So that's a big deal. Good for them. At 2:30 this afternoon, Washington time, all the telegraph offices in the country were notified by the Omaha telegraph office to be ready to receive the signals corresponding to the blows of the hammer that drove the last spike in the last rail that united New York and San Francisco with a band of iron.
That must have been very exciting.
Probably was, actually.
That, yeah. I think there was something in there about... balloons or flags or something as well.
Let's see. Balloons or flags. I'm skimming. Let's see. We got around the parts for the percentage. Another blows. I don't see anything about it.
Okay,
sorry. I don't see it.
No, probably not balloons. I guess they probably didn't really have a lot of balloons in that.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess. Yeah. Oh, flags.
Oh,
flags on City Hall were hoisted at an early hour, and preparations were made to fire 100 guns as soon as the announcement was received.
That's pretty exciting that you're like in San Francisco or wherever, and off in Utah.
Right.
They're about to join the railroad, and all of the telegraph operators are waiting to send off all these messages that, yes, it's been completed. And then San Francisco gets the telegraph notice, and then kaboom, 100 guns go off.
There you go.
To let you know that North and South have now finally been joined. East and West have been joined by the Great Railway.
Yeah.
That is.
It's sort of like,
and all those Chinese people are now out of work. The Chinese and the Irish people.
And we'd never been able to get rid of them.
No.
It's sort of like the first internet, the first Twitter, really. Mm. Those telegraphs. And everyone's enjoying this momentous occasion all together, mm-hmm. despite being spread out around this vast country of ours.
Exactly.
That must have been nice, whenever that happened.
Whenever it was. Yesterday.
It's very dark in here, is what I just realized. I can't read.
Oh. There's a light behind you. There's curtains and things that could be opened.
Thanks, Sabrina. It's true. It was sunny before. That's true.
That's right.
Thank you. Much better. Yay. Oh, that's a relief on my eyes.
Okay. You're listening to a very special episode of Legion of News. Mr. Rick Emerson is unavailable today, and so I am joined here by Mr. Eric D. Snyder. And
has there ever been a more special episode than this one, I wonder?
Of Legion of News?
Yeah.
No.
I don't know what it could have been.
No. Unless you're counting one of the ones where I was doing it by myself.
Oh.
And those were special in, like, you know, the short best kind of way.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
The things going wrong and the buttons being pushed incorrectly. And
things exploding.
Me going, I'm doing everything wrong. I'm failing. So that was... but no. This is good. This is...
We're having a good time.
We are.
Yeah.
Okay. Here we have. I'm trying to stretch now because we're actually running out of stories.
Oh.
Because this has gone a lot quicker. The thing I'm working with Rick, mm-hmm. he talks a lot.
Right.
He talks a lot about everything. And so I know exactly how many stories I have to prepare. And
right.
then he's like, I read the thing, and then he'll talk for like 5 minutes.
But you're saying I'm not as jabbery as Rick Emerson?
No, you're not. But who
that
is?
That has long been one of my failings.
Yeah.
It's probably also easier to talk about stories that happened like today.
Maybe. That's true, yes. I could also read a story from Exotic magazine if I have to. So
I'm gonna go out on a limb and guess there is not a lot of text
in
that
magazine.
I don't
see a lot of stories. I mostly see ads for... strippers.
Yeah, and for...
boobs.
Mail order bribes and stuff.
Wow.
You seemed surprised there was nudity in that magazine.
Well,
you seemed surprised to see bare breasts.
I thought it would be an actual magazine.
No.
with stories and then some ads.
No, have you met Jay Mackin?
And this is no, this is.
He's a porn monger.
Is he?
A monger of porn. I say that with all affection and respect. What?
Do I want to see the ad for Lonesome's Pizza is just a big scary guy.
Yikes.
He looks angry.
Oh, that's a local magazine. That's a local ad.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, I didn't realize this was a local.
Oh, no. This is
a local porn magazine.
No, we have enough gentlemen's clubs and
that's true.
And lingerie modeling places and such here in Portland that we can support our entire whole magazine. Look, here's a Dancing Bear.
And Portland also likes to keep it local with everything.
Yeah, we do. And there's a movie review, I believe.
Really?
Exotic Cinema 2. I have a feeling that's porn.
That sounds pornographic.
And there's a woman who's naked and holding a volleyball in front of her crotch.
Huh. As one does.
Okay. Statutory Ray's Stripper Survival Guide.
Statutory Ray is the guy's name that
yes,
I have to call him?
Yes, apparently his name is... Statutory Ray,
which
is actually kind of funny. I'm sorry, I have to admit.
It is, but...
yeah, I'm sorry. I shouldn't actually... No, I, mean, I shouldn't no, it, admire
it is,
that.
It is funny, a little... Yeah.
Okay, I'm not going to look at that anymore, because it disturbs me.
It's funny if it's sort of a parody of, like on The Simpsons, of what a pervy guy would call himself.
Yeah.
It's not funny when you think that that's probably just what he calls himself.
Yeah, that's his professional
that's
name.
That's probably like what they've called him since high school. Statutory Ray.
His mom gave him that nickname.
His first girlfriend. He was 18. She was 14.
All right. Here we go. Let's do a little more news.
All right.
The Hawaiian steamer Claudine arrived at this port in San Francisco.
You ever had a Hawaiian steamer, by the way?
There's so many things I could say now, and all of them are inappropriate. None of them are what I should say.
That's why I said it. Sorry, you were saying about you had a Hawaiian steamer.
The Hawaiian steamer Claudine arrived in San Francisco at 2 o'clock this morning with the news of a revolution at Honolulu.
Oh.
The revolutionists have succeeded in overthrowing the government of Hawaii, and United States troops have been landed. A provisional government has been established, and a commission headed by Mr. Thurston came in on the Claudine en route to Washington with a petition to the American government to annex the Hawaiian islands to the United States. The commission will leave here tomorrow afternoon and reach Washington next Friday. Queen Liliuokalani mm-hmm. has been deposed from power.
What was her name again?
Liliuokalani.
Uh-huh.
The monarchy abrogated, government buildings seized, and a new provisional ministry composed of four members is sustained by bayonets of volunteers. Queen Liliuokalani attempted on January 14th to promulgate a new constitution, depriving foreigners of the right of franchise and abrogating this existing House of Nobles, at the same time giving her the power of appointing a new house. This was resisted by the foreign element of the community, which at once appointed a committee of safety of 13 members, which called a mass meeting of their classes, at which 1,500 were present. Anyway, upon the accession of Majesty Liliuokalani for a brief period, the hope prevailed that a new policy would be adopted. This hope was soon blasted by her immediately entering into a conflict with the existing cabinet, which held office with the approval of a large majority of the legislature. Blah, 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 wow. blah, blah. Conspiracies against the government.
So
blah,
what,
blah, blah, blah.
So what happened? They were trying to be a revolution, but it didn't take?
No, the revolution apparently has taken.
Oh, it has taken.
The Queen of Hawaii was attempting to... maintain control of things, but she was having issues.
Sure.
With the cabinet.
Hmm.
She was trying to change the Constitution, trying to deprive foreigners of the right to own property and to do things in there.
Seems fair.
She wanted to keep all the foreigners out. Cabinet.
Well, who wouldn't?
The cabinet and the other people, though, in Hawaii wanted to actually do trade with the United States and Japan and such. Hmm. And anyway... she's been kicked out. There was a revolution. There was an uprising, and our fine troops, our fine men in blue and green and what have you, have arrived in Hawaii with their bayonets.
Oh,
and it is believed that we are going to actually be annexing Hawaii.
It seems like a bad idea.
Well, it's not very convenient.
It's not. It's not conveniently located at all.
No,
it's way the hell out there in the ocean.
I mean, what are we going to do with it?
No one has any reason to go there.
No.
It's a tiny place. It's a remote, forbidding island.
Yes.
I would have had more to say during that story, but my mind was entirely focused on trying to think of a joke involving the word hula. Trying to think of some pun involving the word hula. And I could not do it. For the life of me, could not do it.
No. I'm shocked. I'm surprised.
I'm a little baffled myself.
This is right in your wheelhouse, yeah. Here, sir.
I don't know. I don't know what's wrong with me. Now I'm obsessed with it.
Well, I believe it's time to do a little entertainment news. So if the conductor will gear up the orchestra.
Let's go to Hollywood.
There he is. There's our conductor.
Here's some entertainment news now for you from Tinseltown. Fatty Arbuckle's trial will open today. Women may serve on the jury to pass on the charge of causing Virginia Rapp's death. Roscoe Fatty Arbuckle, motion picture actor, will be put on trial here tomorrow for manslaughter and causing the death of Miss Virginia Rapp, motion picture actress, in a hotel in this city last September. I'm sure you remember it well, the scandal that caused.
I do. Rumor has it on the street that he actually damaged her internal organs with a Coke bottle.
I've heard that.
But it's unclear if that was the actual case or if she was merely, you know, a victim of rape.
Right.
Or of course, he may have just been completely railroaded. We do not know.
She may have been a Coke whore.
She may have been, in the earliest sense of the word.
Her name is Virginia Rapp, which
yes.
is an unfortunate name, R-A-P-P-E.
Yes.
Unfortunate name for someone who has been raped to death.
Yes.
Couldn't have asked for a worse name, really.
No. Also, a casting couch gone terribly, terribly, terribly wrong.
That's how they did things in Hollywood in those days. Everything was all about who you slept with or... I mean, not anymore, of course. But
no. No, we've cleaned up that town.
that was the only old-timey entertainment story that I could find.
That was it? Make something up.
I was trying to. Well, here's another one. The popular actor John Wilkes Booth today announced that he would go on tour in the southern states performing his one-man show, Stinkin' Lincoln. An evening of comedy and merriment lampooning the American president, Abraham Lincoln.
Mm.
Mr. Booth, a noted performer throughout the country, has said that this play is tasteful but makes important social commentary and is also brimming with full frontal nudity.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hence the coining of the term, the full booth.
Yes.
Yes.
You might say it's a one-and-a-half-man show.
Mm. Yes.
So that happened. All right. Also in entertainment news, old-timey entertainment news, today, Lucille Ball, popular television actress Lucille Ball, revealed that she is with child.
Really?
Sending CBS executives scrambling to explain how her character on the popular situation comedy I Love Lucy will explain as she gets fatter and fatter. It is suspected that they will have her character also become with child. Perhaps.
Can they do that on television?
They won't be able to say. They won't be able to say that she is pregnant.
No.
They can't use the word pregnant.
They don't even sleep in the same bed,
no,
do they?
No, I assume they'll probably, you know what they'll probably do if they're smart? They will have it turn out to be that this is like an immaculate conception kind of thing. Like the baby just sprang up in her loins spontaneously.
Or better, it's an ancient Indian shaman.
Yes.
Who is just growing inside of her.
Somehow, I'm pretty sure somehow Harpo Marx is involved.
Well, isn't he always? Really?
So that's big news.
I blame William Holden for this, just because.
For Lucy and Desi.
Yes.
He's a foreigner, you know, that Desi Arnaz.
Really?
Yeah, a foreigner. He's from Mexico.
I think about the fact that his name is basically Richard.
Is it? Oh, Ricky Ricardo. Yeah.
Ricky Ricardo.
Yeah, it's not really, not very imaginative.
No.
That's the name.
We don't know anybody who's named like that. Bobby Roberts.
Ricky Ricardo is the name that a racist would make up for a Puerto Rican character or whatever.
Whatever.
I just call him Ricky Ricardo. Ricky Ricardo over here.
Which Desi Arnaz actually was.
Cuban, I know.
And he produced the show. So you'd think he'd have come up with a better name.
A better one, yeah.
Than Ricky Ricardo.
That's like what my grandfather would call any Mexican he saw. Mm. I got a Ricky Ricardo over here.
Do you have any? Do you have a favorite "I Love Lucy" episode? By the way, do you have anything that's really a favorite?
The classics. Everyone says the Vitamita Vegemin and the chocolates on the conveyor belt. Those are classics.
Yeah, for me, for some reason, I don't know why, but my very favorite is Tennessee Ernie Ford as her cousin. That comes to visit, and she tries to drive away because he says the only thing that he's like really afraid of is his mama told him to stay away from Wicked City women.
Yes.
So she dresses up as a Wicked City woman, and of course he doesn't recognize her
because
she's dressed.
Right.
And then she keeps coming and says, "I'm gonna vamp you," and then finally she comes up and she rubs him on his head, and he says, "Are you vamping me?" And she says, "Yes." She goes, "I like it." And then he's done for. But
who was Tennessee Ernie Ford?
He was a singer.
Is that what he was? All right. I know it's the name that I know. I just, all right. So he was like a Grand Ole Opry guy?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Trivia, how long did I Love Lucy run?
35 years.
Close. 6 years.
Okay. Thank you.
194 episodes.
Yep. So how much more time should we vamp here? We're almost done. I'm just talking to Sabrina Miller's keeping an eye on the clock there. So, okay.
We're practically finished.
Well, here, I'll do another another exciting story here. Berlin, which we discussed earlier.
Yes,
we are
during
all,
science news.
We are all members of Berlin.
As apparently.
Berlin, the greatest city of the European continent, fell yesterday afternoon to the Russians as 70,000 German troops laid down their arms in the surrender that Adolf Hitler had said never would come.
Ha ha! Suck it, Hitler.
Sucker. The Soviet triumph after 12 days of history's deadliest street fighting was announced last night by Premier Stalin in an order of the day and in the Soviet communique broadcast from Moscow this morning. Marshal Stalin first issued the order of the day, announcing destruction of the German Ninth Army trapped southeast of Berlin, with the capture of 120,000 of its men and the slaughter of at least 60,000.
That is a bad situation where you're rooting for Stalin over Hitler. Like, thank goodness Stalin won.
Yeah. Second order announced the capture of Germany's big Baltic ports of Rostock and Warnemünde in the 44-mile drive from the 2nd White Russian Army.
You know, your German accent is almost undetectable.
I know. It's like I was born there, isn't it? Why does it sound Swedish? Then Marshal Stalin proclaimed the fall of Berlin. It capitulated at 3 p.m. Moscow time. And by 9 p.m., 70,000 of its staggering defenders had been rounded up and counted by the Russians.
Good.
So there you go. Thus fell the once mighty capital, which Marshal Stalin described as the center of German imperialism and the heart of German aggression, and which Hitler had proclaimed as the seat of his thousand-year Reich Empire.
Whatever.
The empire that in less than 6 years died as it had been born. In blood and suffering.
Is that really what it says?
Yes.
Wow.
They used to write things in newspapers way better.
They were much more colorful than...
Yes.
I have to read this story from Selma, Alabama. Alabama state troopers and volunteer officers of the Dallas County Sheriff's Office tore through a column of Negro demonstrators with tear gas, nightsticks, and whips here today to enforce Governor George C. Wallace's order against a protest march from Selma to Montgomery. At least 17 Negroes were hospitalized with injuries, and about 40 more were given emergency treatment for minor injuries and tear gas effects. The Negroes reportedly fought back with bricks and bottles at one point as they were pushed back into the Negro community, far away from most of a squad of reporters and photographers who have been restrained by the officers.
Wow.
Martin Luther King Jr., Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who was to have led the march, was in Atlanta. After the attack on the marches, Dr. King issued a statement announcing plans to begin another march Tuesday, covering the 50 miles from Selma to Montgomery.
I hope he brings some bodyguards.
Seriously?
You should get that Cassius Clay to come with him.
There you go. That's a good idea.
Well, I think we are probably done. If Miss Sabrina Miller would play us out with the opening theme one more time. And she's like, oh, sure, okay. This has been a very special edition of Legion
of
News.
Very special indeed.
Would old-timey announcer guy like to say goodbye to the people and tell them we'll be back tomorrow?
Thanks for listening. Thanks for gathering around the wireless radio with your best gal.
Rick Emerson will be back from his dirigible tour tomorrow with Don Taylor. Thank you for listening. And drink Ovaltine.